This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Now, I've always loved a good spy thriller, whether it's a heady John le Carré chess game or Jason Bourne defying death every 90 seconds. But right now, it's the old school spy novels that feel surprisingly and especially current, because everything we've learned about Russia and the election of Donald Trump feels in some way like a Cold War spy novel, and not a very believable one at that. I find Jason Matthews' fiction a little bit more believable than real life. Matthews was a CIA operative for over 30 years, recruiting spies and informants in the former Soviet bloc and other places. After retiring from the agency, he started writing. Matthews' Red Sparrow trilogy is full of surveillance and heavy-breathing sex and the streets of Moscow, and I've got to admit it, I love it. It's a great diversion. The third book is on the way, and it's called, maybe with current events in mind, The Kremlin's Candidate. You know, the two novels you published, Red Sparrow and Palace of Treason, and I presume the next one, The Kremlin's Candidate, which is coming next year, that these books are all set in Moscow, and you tell me you've never been to Moscow. You've never been to Russia at all.
I've absolutely not. I've never been to Russia. I've served in the East Bloc during the bad old days, and I'm familiar with the city of Havana. During my visit there, I was under surveillance 24 hours a day, but I've never been to Moscow.
I don't believe you, even as much as I admire those books, but okay.
I swear to you, I've never been to Moscow, and I can't travel there now, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. So I want to know why you set the book in Moscow. If that's a place you never were, you did that because that's the center of our interest as a readership, or because you'd never been there, it was easy in some odd way?
No, Moscow is the big show. Moscow is where the Cold War was fought in the alleyways, and I wanted to write spy novels about the special challenge of the Cold War of operated against the Russians. A lot of very successful thriller writers, their default subjects are counterterrorism or a former FBI guy is being chased by crazed colleagues with the help of a bipolar girlfriend does something amazing. And I wanted to tell a more basic story about the classic Cold War struggle of East and West.
Now, Jason, I lived in Moscow from the very beginning of 1988 until the end of the Soviet Union with my wife, who's still my wife, thankfully. And we were very young. We knew that the apartment was bugged, that we were followed, that the office was bugged, that the office staff had to be hired from an organization that was clearly had to inform each week. And I wonder what you as a spy think that they're learning from bugging journalists. What are they counting on there?
Well, you know the Russians' state of mind. They're xenophobic. They don't want to be ignored. They want to be respected. They have a fascination for outside things. They're caught eternally between Catherine the Great and Ivan the Terrible. So they think that that Remnick is a CIA officer under journalist cover, even though we do not use journalists undercover at all. We are constrained from that.
Not in years. We used to.
Yeah, we found that journalists really didn't have the skills that we were looking
spies.
For.
Yeah.
No, but so the Russians thought for you and your wife, because they had sort of a historical perspective of wives making meetings, pushing the baby buggy while the husband led them away on surveillance runs. They thought that to listen to you, you would A, make a slip, or B, they would get a baseline of what's normal in your house at night. And if the recordings or the audio or maybe even the video revealed that you guys are acting strange, it could be a signal of imminent operational activity, and they would put on extra surveillance.
So give me an instance of you were recruiting an agent. Obviously, you can't tell us the year and place, but tell me the story about a complicated recruitment of an agent in your experience.
Well, we go through a lot of study about what motivates people, and we have an acronym, which is MICE, MICE. And it stands, those are the four basic motivators of human nature. And it stands for money, ideology, conscience, and ego. So we all have those motivators. So during, in the recruitment cycle, during the developmental phase, you're basically getting to know the person as your best friend, as your brother or sister. And you're analyzing and assessing not only motivations, but vulnerabilities, human wants and desires. So, for instance, I had a case that was going along fairly well, but it was based on a true friendship between me and the agent being the foreigner. My time in this assignment was coming to a close, so I was telling him, we're going to have to do what we call a turnover. You're going to meet a new friend. And he said, absolutely not. I've been doing this for you and for you only. And I said, okay. And he was adamant. The next week, I told him, I owe you an apology. I sent in some of the comments that we had discussed the last week, and it went straight to the president's desk. It was all nonsense. Of course, it hadn't. But he puffed up, M-I-C-E-E, ego, and he said, the president read the stuff I sent in? I said, that's right, and we're all very sorry that you can't continue doing this. 6 weeks later, he'd made the turnover meeting with a successor case officer, and the case continued.
Now, so far as I know, there's no S in MICE, no S for sex, and yet you have in your novels a heroine who is sent off to train in what's called Sparrow School, which is essentially a place where you learn the erotic arts in the service of spying for Russian intelligence. Is sex not a motivator? Is sex not a tool?
Sex is a motivator. It generally falls under the category of ego. Our colleagues, our brothers and sisters in military intelligence, actually do put an S at the end of MICE because they are unaware that MICE is that's the plural, plural of the word. But the Western services do not use sex as a motivator like the Russians used to. There's no sex espionage. There's no blackmail. There's no coercion. There's no...
You say used to. You know, that's no longer part of FSB's arsenal?
Well, they no longer have a Sparrow School. I think if, for instance, a foreign diplomat engaged a young lady in a hotel bar in Moscow and got in trouble, she's probably an independent contractor. And the FSB would use what they had on the guy, but they don't do it as a rule.
Now, our intelligence community has said that the Russians, directed by the Russian leadership, interfered in the election. A lot of people, though, say, look, we need more proof of this, real proof. With the background that you have, do you think that we should be skeptical of those intelligence agencies or not?
Well, the 17 intelligence agencies of the intelligence community, include Department of Homeland Security and the Coast Guard and things. Many of them do not know sort of the nuances of what the Russians call active measures. The Russians have been doing active measures, which is a political influence campaigns, since the 1920s, when they were trying to disrupt the white Russians hiding in Paris after the revolution. They do it all the time. They do it in Europe. They do it naturally. So did they affect the election? I think they may have changed some people's mind, but did they change the number of votes? Did they change the Electoral College? I don't think so, no.
So what you're saying is interference in elections is a given in a certain way, but you're not all that concerned about it.
No, I'm not. I'm not concerned about it because it's what the Russians do, and it's what we should know they do, and we should guard against it. I mean, the fact that the DNC didn't have any protections on their mainframe is just astounding.
So the former CIA director, John Brennan, was testifying in front of the House Intelligence Committee in May, and obviously had to do with the Trump situation. And he said, look, frequently, people who go along a treasonous path do not know they are on a treasonous path until it's too late. Now, we're not necessarily talking about treason, but when Donald Trump Jr. it has email exchanges in which he shows an eagerness to meet with Russians who are offering what could be dirty information from Russian sources, Russian government sources, that's something else again, isn't it?
Well, I think the Russians were testing them. That meeting clearly to me was an assessment meeting. Did Jared look up from his phone? Did anyone flirt with the lawyer? Did anyone ask for any special favors? And you can be sure that of the Russians in that room, they could have been co-optees, they could have been retired. But you can bet your bottom dollar they talked to Uncle Sasha the next day.
Uncle Sasha being an intelligence...
Active duty FSB or SVR, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. So it was an assessment meeting. And the Trumps, who are not particularly used to this kind of world, went in sniffing to try to find some dirt on Hillary. Immoral? I don't know.
I wonder what you make of the whole business of Christopher Steele, the British intelligence officer, very experienced and now working in the private sector. He compiled what's known as the Steele dossier that had not only the salacious sexual stuff, which got a lot of play, but also a lot of other information about Trump and Trump's behavior in Russia. When you read that dossier, did it feel authentic, a fraud? What was it?
I know you speak Russian. Disinformatsiya.
Disinformation.
Disinformation.
Yeah.
I think it was so salacious and so outrageous. I mean, that's what the Russians do the best. It's their bread and butter.
Meaning they're better at it than we are?
Absolutely.
Why is that?
They're cunning. They are masters at the chess game, at the moves. And disinformation. And disinformation can come in, many different forms, some of which contradict the other ones, thus giving more credence to the final line they want to push. They're absolutely masterful.
Now, the nerviest thing you do in your novels is that Vladimir Putin himself becomes a character.
Yes.
And that's rarely done in spy novels. I wonder why you decided to do that, and was it just to have a kick or just do something that no one else had done before?
Well, a little bit of both. I wake up every morning and I thank Vladimir for being Vladimir. I mean, he's a terrific character in and of himself. And I asked my first novel, I asked my editor, could I be sued for slander if I included President Putin in my novels. And my editor said, pray for a lawsuit.
Jason Matthews, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Jason Matthews. The first two books in his Red Sparrow trilogy are available now. There'll be a movie of the first novel with Jennifer Lawrence coming soon. And the third book, The Kremlin's Candidate, is due this winter.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.